Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my book, Anti-Diet, Reclaim Your Time, Money, Well-Being, and Happiness Through Intuitive Eating, which is available wherever books are sold. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/book to order it now. That's ChristyHarrison.com/book. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised.
Anti-diet revolution, we're for health at every size.
Hey there, welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering an audience question about how to heal your relationship with cooking. This is a really important topic because diet and wellness culture have made so many of us feel like our cooking has to meet these restrictive standards, and it just takes all the pleasure out of cooking and eating. It's no wonder that many people struggle to enjoy cooking again when they're working on healing their relationship with food. Before I answer the question, just a couple of quick announcements. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my book, Anti-Diet, Reclaim Your Time, Money, Well-Being, and Happiness Through Intuitive Eating, which is available wherever books are sold. It's a great companion to this podcast because it goes into depth about diet culture and the ways it harms us, with lots of scientific references and resources to help you make the anti-diet case to yourself and the people in your life. It also lays out the foundation of intuitive eating and helps you start making peace with food in your body. And if you get the audiobook, you can hear me read it to you as well. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/book to get it. That's ChristyHarrison.com/book. Now, without further ado, let's get into this week's question. It's from a listener named Annie who writes, "The way I eat changed drastically from before the pandemic to during the worst of the pandemic to now. One thing that stayed the same throughout, however, is that I hate cooking. Pre-pandemic, I ate at restaurants a lot. It was basically my hobby. But then at home, I tried my best to follow the wellness diet and cooked wellness-approved foods. I even tried intermittent fasting, disaster, partly because it seemed like I could cook less. Then during the pandemic, I moved to a small town with barely any restaurants and lived with roommates for the first time in 6 years. I started moving away from the wellness diet in earnest, eating certain foods and in ways that used to be off limits, and found I felt best when I was getting enough food, no matter what kind of food it was. I shared cooking duties with my roommates, so I only had to cook 2 nights a week, which was manageable. I rarely ate out because there wasn't much available and I had food at home. Now I'm back in the city, living on my own again. I'm giving myself unconditional permission to eat anything I want and enough to be full. The problem is, I only want to eat at restaurants now after a year of home cooking, and it's expensive. I can't afford to just keep getting takeout, but when I think about cooking, I just want to throw my pots and pans out the window. When I was into the wellness diet, I could tell myself I was being good and virtuous by cooking at home. Now I'm like, food is neutral, it's cooking that's the real enemy. How do I heal my relationship with cooking so I still spend some money at restaurants, but most of it at the grocery store? How do I cook cheap, easy, and actually tasty? So thanks, Annie, for that great question. And before I answer, I'll just give my usual disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. So first of all, I just want to empathize with your situation because I know that cooking when you don't want to can be a real pain. And yet, unfortunately, it's also a necessity for those of us who can't afford to eat out every meal, which is most people. So how can we turn cooking into something more manageable and maybe even enjoyable? I found that there are two central things to keep in mind: practicality and pleasure. On the practical side, I think it's helpful to start with a stocked fridge and pantry so that you're not scrambling for ingredients or frustrated by the lack of options when it comes time to cook. I would aim to have large containers of staple ingredients on hand, like oil, butter, vinegar or cooking wine, salt, pepper, a few versatile spices or spice mixes, and several starches that you like and maybe that are culturally important to you, like rice, pasta, tortillas, potatoes, couscous, whatever. Obviously, this might mean making a bit of an investment up front, right? So for people on very limited budgets, those ingredients might need to be purchased over several shopping trips. But once you get stocked up, you probably won't have to buy those foods again for a while because they come in such large containers that, you know, you'll use them little by little. In addition to those staples, I would say you probably need to make a weekly-ish grocery trip for perishable ingredients. And it's helpful to make a list ahead of time so that you don't get distracted in the store and end up with a bunch of random things that don't really go together. But, you know, what exactly do you put on the list, right? That might seem like the tricky part, but this is where pleasure can be your guide. You know what you like to eat at restaurants, right? So you can use that as a jumping-off point for creating your own meals. For example, if you often get takeout Italian food, you can try to recreate those flavors at home by getting pasta, whether it's boxed or fresh, basics for a sauce or a jarred sauce, a nice meat or fish, and some Parmesan cheese to sprinkle on top. Even if you splurge on a few fancy ingredients, cooking at home generally saves you money over the long term, especially when you're comparing it to eating at restaurants, right? Because the ingredients make multiple meals. And so instead of spending $20 on a takeout dish that you'll eat in one sitting, maybe you're spending $20 on, you know, five or six meals, right? Of course, not all restaurant meals can easily be recreated at home. So try to make sure you're not setting yourself up for disappointment. You might love ordering sushi, for example, but it takes considerable skill, time, and effort to make that at home. So instead, you might try to make a sushi bowl with similar ingredients, but a lot less fuss. Aim for recipes that you'll have success with and won't get frustrated making, but that will have a big payoff in terms of pleasure. Speaking of pleasure, I'm curious how much you're prioritizing it in your home-cooked meals and whether, you know, you still have any of those wellness diet rules lingering in your head, right? Maybe there's rules saying that food eaten at home can't be like food at restaurants, that it has to be quote-unquote healthy, whole, unprocessed, etc., right? You might look at whether there are unspoken rules against certain ingredients that you're still holding on to, like, you know, are you skimping on salt, fat, carbs, or anything else because of lingering wellness diet prohibitions. You can really work to throw out those rules and center pleasure in your cooking, which often means using more of those formerly forbidden ingredients than you're used to in order to help food really taste good and be satisfying. Finding a good source of non-diet recipes can help you get a better sense of how much oil, salt, etc. to use in order to create pleasurable meals. Some resources I really like are Samin Nosrat's cookbook and Netflix series Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, which are really great for helping you, you know, learn those principles, learn how much salt to use and fat and how acid and heat contribute to flavor. And there's some ambitious recipes in there as well as some everyday ones. Also, if you have family members who cook in traditional, non-diet culture-influenced ways, you know, maybe a grandmother who cooks, I don't know, traditional Chinese cuisine or Mexican food or whatever it might be, you can ask them to share recipes with you, too, as another way to broaden your cultural and culinary repertoire. Another way to make cooking easier and get out from under the wellness diet's rules is to look for frozen, pre-made, and/or pre-cut options that you enjoy. So despite what wellness diet culture or even some food media outlets may have told you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with using boxed or canned or frozen, pre-chopped or pre-cooked ingredients in your meals. In some cases, they might be slightly more expensive than their raw counterparts, but if they taste good and help get the job done more easily, then that can make the difference between feeling empowered to cook and feeling so daunted that you have no choice but to order takeout, right? Or you feel like you have no choice but to order takeout, which costs a lot more in the long run. So I'd invite you to see if you can get some easy building blocks to combine in different ways. And also don't be afraid to get entire meals that are pre-cooked and frozen, right? Those are great weekday or weeknight staples around my house for something quick, easy, and tasty that's a lot cheaper than ordering takeout. If you're going to be cooking something a little more ambitious than, say, a frozen pizza, it's helpful to do it when you aren't feeling fatigued or ravenous. The best time to cook, I would say, is when you aren't already at the point of extreme hunger, because you'll be able to be more present and enjoy the process of cooking more, and you'll also be more likely to follow through on your intention to cook rather than order out. You can experiment with this for yourself, and you may find that you feel a lot better if you start cooking at the early signs of hunger, which for some people might be when they first start thinking about food or what to eat for the next meal, rather than waiting until hunger is raging. Of course, you might not always be able to do that because of work or school schedules, not to mention more serious issues like food insecurity, although it doesn't sound like you're personally struggling with that, Annie, which is why I didn't really go into that here. So if you get to a place where you're ravenous but you need to cook, you can also try having a snack before or while cooking to take the edge off, right? If that diet culture voice pops up in your head saying that you're not allowed to have this snack or that it's bad to be eating while cooking, you can gently thank it for its concern because at some level it is trying to look out for you. And then, you know, firmly let it know that you're going to take care of yourself by eating now and you don't want to hear any criticism. There's so much more I can say on this subject, but I will leave it there for now. And I hope that helps give you some support in healing your relationship with cooking, both for Annie and for anyone else who's listening. If you want to submit your own question for a chance to have it answered, either here or in my Food Psych Weekly newsletter or both, you can go to ChristyHarrison.com/questions. That's ChristyHarrison.com/questions. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, I would be so grateful if you'd take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can see all the places to subscribe at ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. That's ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. To get full show notes and a transcript of this episode, just go to ChristyHarrison.com/292. And to get the transcript, just scroll down to the bottom of the page and enter your email address. This episode was brought to you by my book, Anti-Diet, Reclaim Your Time, Money, Well-Being, and Happiness Through Intuitive Eating, which is available wherever books are sold. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/book to order it now. That's ChristyHarrison.com/book. A big thanks, as always, to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Watasek, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show every week. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and our logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.